Welcome to Anything But a One, Adventures in Miniature Wargaming. Here are your hosts, Tom Castaños, Richard Martinez, and Ray Winstead. Take it away, guys.
Hey, welcome back to Anything But a One, Adventures in Historical Miniature Wargaming. Once again, as always, I'm Tom Castaños here with Richard Martinez and Ray Winstead. Today we're going to talk about list building. There are a lot of games out there that are very much geared toward point systems and army lists available to you. Pros, cons, like it, hate it, is there a point in it? That's what we're going to talk about today. But we're going to institute something new today where we're going to bring in some kind of, what we've seen new in the hobby, what's going to come up new that we've seen bouncing around. And for me, I'm going to start this off and say that I've been watching a lot of unboxing videos about the new Warlord Resin Prussian Cavalry. And a lot of hatred. Woo! A lot of ugliness talking about these particular castings. People mentioning, oh, it just reminds me of the floppy Airfix figures when I was a kid and all of that.
Yep.
And I've looked at them as closely as people will put pictures, and they don't look bad. Now, I don't know. I've not worked with the material yet, and I've ordered a box just so I can do that. So hopefully within a couple of weeks, I can speak a little bit more intelligently on these miniatures when I get them in my hand. You know, I want to know, is it just kind of that I hate change thing, or are they that bad? I know, a couple of months ago, Warlord released resin Spanish infantry, and I did see those kind of close up, and this is not about the material. I just didn't think those were great castings. And those were a third-party manufacturer, as Warlord so often does. I think it was Three Armies that originally made those figures. And they were a little toy soldiery. But
I didn't see those.
Yeah,
but
so
I
like,
have looked at the new Prussian resins.
I didn't think the detail looked bad at all.
I didn't either. Somebody brought up the fact that like the old Airfix soldiers, miniatures. Some of the riders didn't look appropriate for the horse. The horse was maybe charging a little too fast, and the guy looked a little too relaxed.
Lackadaisical. So
they didn't quite mate that well.
Okay.
And I think there was an argument to be made there.
Okay.
Well, but so far as the overall effect, I was intrigued. If I was doing Prussians, I think I'd be willing to buy a box and take a chance.
The toy soldier aspect of the Spaniards, say, for example, they're marching with their shoulder arms or something like that the musket just stuck to the plume on the hat, all became one very minifig Austrian
or
kind of thing going on.
Minifigs,
I kind of want a box of those too, just to see, what we're getting at. They're all one piece, so Tommy loves that, right? There's no assembly involved.
And even though I kind of fancy myself the model builder of the bunch, I like multi-piece guys because I can tinker with them. I really have a problem with one-piece miniatures. And
if they're well done.
I don't know. Maybe even the Airfix nostalgia thing is kind of kicking in, but my first miniature army was pretty much all Airfix.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if I'm going to paint 70 of them, I don't want to.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter anymore.
I don't know that in my army, if I'm doing a very large army, and Napoleonic armies tend to be the larger ones that you do, that every single model has to be an absolute work of art.
And in fairness of these Spanish, there were quite a few different figures, in spite of the fact that they all had a very kind of little toy soldier look to them, head left, head right, left foot up, right foot up. They all had little minor differences, so they weren't identical. They weren't just like a bag of plastic soldiers from the toy store kind of thing. So anyhow, so hopefully in a couple of weeks, I'll be able to say something intelligent about them when I actually have some of them in my hand. So yeah, we want to start bringing up some kind of, topical things. Whether web pages, books, movies that we've seen recently, and please, 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 if you're out there listening and you've got something you would like to have brought up or something that you've seen that you want to mention, drop us a line, contact us on our Facebook page, and we'll be happy to add to that or add you in or let you in if you want to and talk about it. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, let's get on to our topic of the day, which is list building. Now, probably coming to mind immediately, the two games that are the forefront of that particular world for us would be things like Team Yankee / Flames of War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe Bolt Action. Yeah. Ray's not as in tune with Bolt Action as you and I are, but it certainly can very much be a list-building game.
It is unusual that you state that there are certain game systems where it does take a much more prevalent a piece of how you approach the game, and then there are other games where it doesn't come in anywhere at all. It doesn't come in at all.
I take so much horrible, guilty pleasure in people coming to, say, Hail Caesar or Black Powder from the 40K crowd, and yes, they are having an absolute psychological meltdown because there's no points. Well, how can I possibly make an army? There's no points here. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, they're needing counseling and a safe place. And then the Black Powder people come up. There are points when you get to the supplement books, but they're very afterthoughty points. Rick Priestley did not sit and go, I believe this should be 28 points. No one cared because that's not the way him and the Perry brothers play a war game. But that doesn't make it wrong.
It's just culture shock for them.
Pirate of the Caribbean meme. It's the points are more of a suggestion than an actual rule.
But not in some games. Not in some games.
Well, I'm talking about Hail Caesar and most of the Black Powder-ish.
If you came from a world where that is what drove the game, then you're a little bit lost when it's not there. So let's talk about games that are driven by points. And boys and girls, Tommy's going to sit back and watch the fireworks because these two have a very different opinion of this. And who would like to start?
We'll let Richard go first.
Richard's going to go
first. I can go ahead and begin. I would be the one on the faction on the side of that I don't have a problem with list building. I believe it has a part to play in the game systems that we enjoy. I think it brings an aspect to the game of building, in one sense, building a balanced game. It's not the only way to build a balanced game. You have good scenario design, so on and so forth. But it is one way when you can do quick games that people haven't spent a lot of effort in trying to construct ahead of time to make sure that there is that parity as people engage in the battlefield or in the miniature battlefield. Mm-hmm. And so it has a place. I'm not saying that I believe it should be the only way a game is played, but I believe that it's as viable as any other way that you could approach playing miniature wargaming.
Okay. Ray? Jane, you ignorant. No,
I'm sorry. I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Old people will get that.
Saturday Night Live. Yeah, well, anyway. First, let's preface this with pointing out that we're talking about, so far as this podcast is concerned, historical miniature wargaming.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're bringing history into it, a great many of the things that people try to do in list building realistically should already be done for you. You have tables of organization. You have orders of battle. All these things should be your guide on what you're doing. Most actual battles aren't balanced. So if you're looking for balance in a game, you're not really looking for a historical war game as so much as you're looking for a game. And I think at some point you have to decide which side of that line you're actually on.
All right.
You know, which way you're going to go. And I understand that some people want more compromise in one direction than the other direction. I, for the most part, am looking for things that play like the books that I read.
This isn't video, but Richard's making faces. So
yes,
Rich,
I'm ready. I'm waiting for the referee to stay tag
nice.
In.
Nice. You guys are highly presidential. I want to say right now. So far, it's early.
I think we're doing better than we did in the actual. But no, I just think that when you go up on list building, you've kind of gone off into fantasy land. You've really left a greater part of the history behind you.
Okay.
You've lost sight of what you were trying to accomplish.
So with that comment, I really couldn't disagree more. I don't think you've gone off in fantasy land. I do agree that warfare is not always fair. But I also would say no one's interested in, at least I'm not, I'll speak for myself, I'm not interested in playing a series of last stand fights where there's always lopsided gameplay on one side versus the other. I think both sides should have an equal chance to be able to have fun there for most of the time. Again, if you want to build a scenario that's specific to one side being the underdog, that's great for that one time out. If I'm playing a game 10 times in a row, I don't want to fight 10 times on the underdog side of it and trying to always fight my way up. Yes, Ray is correct. There are tables of organization that exist. I don't believe that by doing list building that you may do some disservice to that, because most of the lists I've seen kind of revolve around compulsory components around a table of organization for many times. Not all games do that, but many of them do. Because I can name two table of organizations that would not make a very good game, a very good fight to fight against. I mean, I can take the table of organization for some kind of Russian militia in World War II and SS, you know, troops with their Tiger tanks. They're both TO and E's, but it's not going to mean that it's going to be a balanced or fair game that's playing it, because you take one battalion here and one battalion there.
Now, how many militia.
I was going to say, depends on how many of those militia I throw at you.
Oh, so you need to know how many points worth?
I need points worth to calculate the balance.
You take one battalion,
you get the militia, I get the SS King Tigers, let's play.
Okay. So when we first started doing this, when we go way back, and I mean back into the Ice Age, when we first started wargaming.
When this fish was alive behind
me. Yeah.
I'm going to put a picture on the webpage of the fish so you know what we're talking about.
You know, the games we were playing didn't have points. I mean, we started out with Empire 3 and Rally Round the Flag. And if Rally Round the Flag had points, I don't recall. I know we ignored them.
Along with the rules, we ignored that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Quite a few things were ignored. Yeah.
Basically, we played off of Orders of Battle. And you learned after a few games how to kind of balance the games out. We learned how to manipulate terrain.
Well, yeah, I'll throw in that now. The one to me, in a much more modern time frame, not game, but when we were physically playing, that fits the category better than what you're talking about would be Fire and Fury.
Mm-hmm.
Because we literally took that one army list out of the back of the rules, the Gettysburg
Order of Battle
1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and our armies were built off of those pretty much verbatim. You had the First Corps.
Longstreet's Corps.
I had like two divisions of Second Corps. And then
y'all had whatever.
I had the other person. I had Reynolds.
You had Reynolds, and somebody else decided to do every lousy corps in the Union Army. O. Howard and Sickles and all that. Yeah. But anyway, we won't mention names. But but yeah, the reality of it is, we learned very rapidly. I mean, certainly, just pure numbers says it's not corps on corps, because a Union corps is a little tiny thing, mm-hmm. and a Confederate corps is like a Union Army in some ways. But we played that without points. And we did eventually learn it was about 2-1, 3-2 Union Corps versus Confederate to play a game that had a fair chance for either side.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be done. A fair game can be mustered without the point.
Well, I think you bring up a lot of good points. Again, never saying that points were a prerequisite to making a balanced game. No, I've never stated that. It's a way to bring balance into the game. But I think you bring in a very great point to what I was saying is, here we took that Gettysburg Order of Battle and through time and space transplanted it into many different fields that we played in Civil War. We played in the farmhouse.
It
was Gettysburg Order of Battle. We played on top of the hill. It was the Gettysburg Order of Battle.
Yeah.
We played underwater. It was the Gettysburg Order of Battle.
Yes.
It did not matter. And so you wound up playing the same, you know, switch out the terrain, maybe switch out the objectives. It was the same list always fighting each other. That we had the same proportion of elites, the same proportion of leaders that were elite.
True.
You really just refought it with different terrain aspects. And so we learned what the right proportion was eventually to build a balanced game. But to me, that wasn't every... Okay, I guess trying to say a long comment to say, not every Civil War battlefield is Gettysburg.
True.
Right? And so there was nothing wrong with bringing in variety and bringing in different types of troops. We even tinkered with the idea of playing in the Western theater where you didn't have those massive modifiers where you were always going to get
positive
your brigade to move where you wanted to go.
Right.
We did it without points. But to say that because if we would have brought points in, it would have destroyed the home game system, I think is going a bit too far on that.
So I'm
going
to jump on Ray's side of this for a second because I really do kind of fall right in the middle of this argument. And I know this is kind of more what Ray's talking about than not, but he paints with a broader brush and you can shoot holes in what I'm about to say. What bothers me about list building aren't the lists. What bothers me about a point system aren't the points in the book. And again, I'm going to go to the evil of all of modern times, Facebook, in watching these people just... All they do is they spend more time calculating the perfect list than they do about playing. You know, yes. It's one of those things. So for example, in bolt action, you know, one of the key elements in that list, how many dice you put in the bag. It's almost less about what the quality of the troops are, but it's lots of them so that you get a bunch of dice in the bag so that when you're pulling dice, you have a greater... mathematical chance of moving more than your opponent does. So whereas the list is still as historically accurate as Warlord made it, you know, they gave you a scenario, they gave you a theater. This is the, you know, North Africa list. So you're staying within historical boundaries, but they're just squeezing the gaminess out of it by calculating, hyper-calculating the list. And I see it on Team Yankee. I see it on where there could be whole discussion groups just about what is the perfect Russian list to play mid-war version 4 Flames of War against this. And
it becomes more about manipulating the math than it does playing the game.
Yeah, I guess.
In many, many ways.
For me, it's just about, I'd like to build a Russian force, you know, whatever it is. I'm playing Napoleonics and I want to build a section of the whatever corps and I take it out to fight. And I didn't really think about how it's going to react against his French whatever. That's the corps I have. And I want to fight that corps because it's historical.
Yes.
I didn't stay up at night worrying if I had enough cannon to balance out against his thing. But again, that's just me. Like I said, the points didn't cause that to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
The way people choose to apply them is what did. That's where my rub is.
I can definitely see the point you're bringing up. And I would agree that some, you know, over massage the points and spend too much time on that. Two counterpoints I'll bring to that. The first one is I can see that happen in historical force too. And Ray and I have talked about this before too.
It has.
Now, it has not happened in our group very often. And again, I would say that the situation you've described with point values and, you know, having headaches because you're trying to spend nights all list over list hasn't occurred within our group either. And so that's not really a dynamic we've had to confront with.
Kind of more of a tournament thing.
If you do more of a Facebook and you want to spend, you know, time on the forums and you get into arguments there, that's a different story. But within our dynamic, in our gaming group, it hasn't been.
That is true.
But let me give you the example of where historically that can occur exactly the same way that you've described as well, with a lot less effort. And all these calculations, all I have to do, and I'll take Napoleonics as a good example for that, is to say, my historical Tione force is I'm going to build the Imperial Guard Corps. I don't care with what you're going to play with. I don't care if you've got Russian Cossacks on your side. I have the French Imperial Guard. And you've done, in essence, the same exact thing.
Yeah.
In many ways. And yes,
in many ways, you're right. And it hasn't happened.
If you go back far enough, we did have that in our group when we had a few more people in the group.
Yeah.
There were a couple of players who seemed to always go that direction.
Right.
But I'll say that happens in any game, in any version, whether it's points or no points. There are the people that build the Tiger Tank armies. And they're the ones that build the
right. That's the best description I can give. It's going to occur in both. So, I mean, again, I don't understand all the vile and vitriol toward points. It happens in both cases.
Yes. You will have those players who will always gravitate towards the
biggest
elite
and the best.
Yep.
But I guess what I react to is that when you start introducing lists, it depends on how important the list building becomes in the game. But when you start introducing lists, people who normally wouldn't do that begin to become more obsessed with the synergy of their army and how each little piece fits together. When we first started playing, way back then, there was a wargamer who said something to me that I thought was very profound at the time, and it stuck with me. They said, historically, what makes it interesting in a war game is that historical commanders didn't get to pick their force. They had to make do with what they had. So if you were an Austrian commander,
from playing Austrians, I know that.
Yeah, especially if you weren't in favor, you probably didn't have one of the better Austrian units. You made do with what you had. Your career was built on how well you managed the dregs that you were handed. And you eventually moved up to better troops, maybe. So a lot of the attraction for me is playing those not quite cherry-picked army of Navy SEALs. You know, it's making do with some of the lesser, not quite as well put together brigades. I mean, do you remember who that war gamer was that told me that? You know him. It was you.
Hey, the age gets on me. I don't know. I said that?
Yes, you said that way back when.
Well, if the points work, if the lists from the company are designed well, because I see this, and I'll go back to Bolt Action again, people very quickly, for those Tiger Tank minded people, and they say, just finished my Tiger Tank, what should I do with it? And 9 times out of 10 they say, put it on a shelf, it's beautiful. That's a whole lot of points for one thing that's going to get blown up in an infantry assault versus 4 other things that would do you better. So if you choose to misuse your points and blow 300 of your 500 points on one tank, you know, that's on you, as the kids say, right? So, I don't know. I mean, the list can work. I like the list as a starting point for making reasonably balanced games. And again, I agree with you. History isn't balanced. But I agree with Rich, too. You don't always want to play Thermopylae. I mean, you don't always want to be the 300.
And I don't really I don't really oppose list building just on principle. What I don't like is how I see it change the game over time. When list building becomes the focus of the game and not the actual game on the table. And I've seen that happen many, many times. When you start looking at a lot of tournament games, I mean, when you look at games like X-Wing and what it became, the whole game began to revolve around the list. You know, to the point where there were prepackaged lists. You went online, you found the list you wanted to play, and each list even had its own little name by how it was branded.
Yeah.
I guess I can accept that with a game like X-Wing, which is, you know,
well, it's nothing to base it on.
Thing.
Right.
But when you start applying those same things
the Alderaan monkeys attacked the planet of the apes, I mean, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, you know, you got the Han Solo, you know, Millennium Falcon build. But, you know, I guess I can accept it with that where it's still fantasy. But when you start applying those same ways of approaching a game to a historical game, I think just so much gets lost in at that point. When you just start cherry picking the best stuff and you start really getting into the math of how these units are going, you're not really playing the historical units anymore. What you're doing is you're playing the math that the game designers set up. And that does not appeal to me at all.
You know, one comment on what you mentioned earlier about, and you mentioned the X-Wing piece, and I think points is going to be what tournaments are more heavily based on, because, you know, they have time limits in there that we don't normally have to face as just recreational gamers. They got to get to so many game points. They do try and bring a sense of balance because no one's going to get score high on a last stand and you're massively overwhelmed.
And it's understandable.
And so, yeah, that's a different dynamic. What I do find interesting, though, is the argument that if I understand correctly, and you're right, you do take pride in the forces that I've always seen you build and paint, to take these middle of the road type units to make what's a thematic force. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have no problem with making thematic forces
at
all.
Playing the average guy. Mm-hmm.
But knowing that kind, and you called him that guy, and so I'll refer to him too as that guy, that guy exist in both worlds, both the point list building world and in the non-point building world. And I guess my confusion on it is you choose to want to picture or emphasize that guy when it comes to the historical list, but yet not emphasize him when it's in the thematic list where I build the Imperial Guard Corps from 1812. They both exist. They're both there. They both make the game less
fun. You don't even have to go to that extreme.
You're
DeVos Corps.
Right.
Well, you've got the best of the best. Yeah, you've got three of the greatest division commanders ever, all elite.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know.
And so I don't know if anybody would argue that both those types of people exist, but why one ruins one and one doesn't ruin the other, that's the part I'm confused about in the discussion, because we know they both exist, and we don't talk about that guy when it comes to the historical thematic list, but we want to talk about him in the list building version.
No, I think you're right. I think it does ruin it on both sides.
Yeah. So we can agree that people that cherry pick.
Where,
it ruins the game on both sides.
It's not points as much as it's cherry picking.
Yes, it's the cherry picking.
That's fair.
The point itself, having points in the game doesn't really bother me.
I win.
Well, thanks for coming today. We're over with it.
We can play
the music. Chantel, where are you? Start, Chantel.
But I think when you start introducing the points into a historical game, it tends to steer the game in a direction that I don't like watching it getting steered towards. Whereas without the points, you just have the guy that says, I want to win every game, so I'm going to take the old guard. And that's pretty much
it. So let me jump in on that. So,
and we've had to deal with that player.
Oh, yeah, we have.
Yes.
So number one, you know, my answer to this has always been real scenario building. If you do research and write a scenario, then you come to the game table with historical accuracy and at least through the objectives, a winnable game for both sides, even though they may not be numerically the same. It's just again, you don't want to play full on Forlorn Hope, but maybe your goal is just to hang on to a crossroad for a certain amount of time, or, you know, this not imaginary but unnecessary on the tabletop reinforcements are going to arrive at this turn. That's all you have to make it out to, or you've got to seize this bridge or whatever. So just like I know I need to lose weight, I know that's what I need to do to make these games, and I don't do either of them, right? I'm sitting here with my Dr. Pepper in my hand. You know, I know what I need to do, but we don't do
enough
the step of, when we've said this before, when we played Colonel Gray's scenarios on mm-hmm. Age of Eagles. Those games are always the best ones they're we've great. Ever played yeah. because they're pre-thought out. So here in San Antonio, there's a store, Dragon's Lair, that pre-pandemic had a big annex with dozens and dozens of tables. And every Friday night, there's guys in there cranking out bolt action games faithfully. And they are the epitome of the list builders. And I'm not saying that in a mean way, because you can't write a new scenario every Friday. They're, and you don't know who's showing up that Friday. So you brought your 900 points of mid-war Germans, and this guy brought his 900 points of whatever. And what I'll say, for whatever lack of what we think the value of that game is, they play every Friday night.
Yes.
So from a social standpoint, they've won. Mm. You know, they're less concerned about the minutiae and the feel of the game.
Yes.
They get in there and roll dice and have reasonably equal games and, you know, the beer afterwards and all of that. So I'm not going to say, like, lower your expectations and play chutes and ladders, but certainly there's a value to the way they do things. They play far more than we do.
And I do understand the way they play and the reasons they do. I'm not suggesting that everybody should suddenly shun list building points.
No.
Not by any stretch. No. I think it's important to point out that I play very few pickup games.
Right.
I generally avoid them.
Yep.
I like playing with players that I know, and I like playing in games that we've organized beforehand.
Yeah.
So there's already, as much as possible,
right,
some scenario or at least an idea towards a scenario.
Because, you know,
to play there.
Where we don't do that, and like the world we're in right now with Team Yankees, we're still learning the game.
Yeah. Right.
So there we just say, bring 50 points of blah, 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 and we shoot tanks at each
bring
other.
Bring 50 points. But that 50 points is really geared more towards just so we have something comparable on the table.
Right.
I would say that even though we've said bring 50 points, our games have not always been terribly balanced.
No, that's true. And by the way, points,
even though we've all played the same number,
points alone doesn't make a balanced game either. Yeah.
Yes, I remember the last game we tinkered with. I had my challengers, which match yours, but I had a unit on the table compared to three units.
It's back to the Tiger Tank and bolt action thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just
balance such a finicky thing. If I recall that he won a game and lost a game, that's pretty bad.
Well, that's true. That's
but
true.
Anyway, yes. I digress. But one thing I will say in favor of what Ray is talking about, where points do kind of get in the way, is just to be able to play the game. Two contrary examples. When we play Pike and Shot, we don't do points. We each have a balanced force. You know, we cannibalize half of Tom's army and give it to us so we can play.
Well, Tom being the only one that's actually painted.
But I got two regiments built. So
got yours built. So you're even ahead of me there.
So we,
which is ironic because that's like one of my favorite time periods, and I'm the only one.
That's not lost to us,
that's
by
right.
the way.
Yeah. You got us into that game system. But we have had many enjoyable games. I think with that game system, not even having points, not even thinking about points, we divide. Now those it's got its own inherent balances. The infantry on one side is the same as the other. We just make sure we have the same number and we're pretty much good. And when we're trying to get something in with Team Yankee, though, our discussion earlier today, Ray, where you're saying I'm having a problem just building a basic force. I want to have this starter force to play with, and based on the points we've assigned, you're not able to build the type of force, thematic force, you would like to see. And that shouldn't happen. We should be able to just start it up and play, and then points is something that comes in on the, if there's even points involved.
I've got a conspiracy theory thing for that. That Battlefront has kind of done that a little bit on purpose. That when you try and play with a little bit of stuff, the game gets all wonky.
And that's really what we're talking about. I think it would be very easy to build a very playable 100-point force. But we're all trying to avoid what we've seen as the parking lot issue.
Right.
So we want our things more spread out.
But the rules, particularly for like Soviet players, makes it be...
Exactly.
So there's that weird disparity. Really, it's a little bit based in history, but still, I think there's a lot of tinkering on Battlefront's part to sell plastic.
Yeah.
And resin. It becomes so we've mutually agreed to keep our games at 50 points or
while
less.
We're learning. Yeah, while we're learning.
While we're learning.
While we're learning. Correct.
And I've realized, being the NATO player here, that it's very difficult to build anything resembling a balanced list for at least the NATO faction that I'm doing for 50 points or less.
Yep.
If you go with Leopard 2s, which is what I was looking at, my 50-point list is basically four tanks.
Right. You're either playing with World War II surplus or space-age technology.
Exactly.
And nothing in the middle. Yeah.
You know, so it becomes very hard to make a legal list that balances out properly.
So it's really point of view, like so many things, that I see the argument here is way less about points and more about kind of extremist gamers and how they manipulate. Because like you made a great point, Rich, it doesn't take points to be a knothead and roll in there with the 10th Legion, versus some very average, Prussian army, with a bunch of Landwehr and all of that. I see your point, Ray, and it makes my skin crawl when I see the conversations on Facebook. It's like all they appear to be concerned about. But I think it's also just their idle hands of the times in between that they get to really play. They're so involved in the game that when they're not playing, all they can think about is how to play the game, and I guess that's a good thing.
I think for some people, they're just interested in the game and not the history, and that's fine too.
Yeah.
I'm the other way around. I play the game because of the history.
Right.
Or the implied history in the case of Cold War gone hot.
Right.
That is my focus. That's my reason.
And this is a whole other episode we're going to be doing shortly about Team Yankee. That's complicated because we said this is a historical miniatures war game podcast, and that game ain't historical.
No.
Thankfully, right? Because we all lived through an era when that any moment looked like it was going to happen and thus far didn't. So is it problematic when you play a non-historical, quasi-historical game? Guys, great discussion. I think we've equally made different groups of people angry today, so that's good. That's always our value. We always want to be fair.
That's right.
Fair and balanced at all times. You can find our podcast on all of the major podcast apps, Stitcher, Google, iHeartRadio, all of them, Apple, iTunes, all of that stuff. If you're listening to this podcast right now, I'm really going to implore you, please, please, please drop us a good rating on whatever app you're using, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. What that's going to do is it's going to move us up in the ratings to where more people are going to hear this thing. So a ton of y'all are listening. Not a lot of you have yet got on there and give us a 5-star rating. So I really ask that you please, if you can, that'll go a long ways to helping support this podcast. If you want to, when you're on our webpage, anythingbut01, all spelled out, .buzzsprout.com, upper right-hand corner, there's a little heart icon. You click on that, buy us a beer. For as little as a $2 single donation, you can help support this podcast, and that also goes a long way to, hosting costs and things like that. Another great discussion, guys. Thanks for being here. We will see you again next time.
This has been Anything But a One, Adventures in Miniature Wargaming. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps or on our webpage at anythingbutaone.buzzsprout.com. Please subscribe to the show and rate us 5 stars. And of course, tell your friends. See you next time.